they wanted to invest into a little bit of real estate, stock market, and a business venture. And so they diversified out of crypto, used our DST. We're the first one to do the DST for crypto. And so it all just depends on what you're trying to solve for. And you're right. We want to give you those options. And hopefully, you know, it's going to give you the freedom that you desire and the impact you want to make.
You're listening to Ice Cream with Investors, a podcast that is dedicated to teaching you how to better invest your money so that you can live a more intentional life. I'm your host, Matt Foer, and it is my goal to teach and empower you to remove the roadblocks to your financial success.
All right, Brett, welcome to the show.
Matt, so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, we like to start with the difficult questions here. What's your favorite ice cream?
Mint chocolate chip, man. I mean, come on. Is there any better than a good, solid, thrifty mint? You know, it's also the place that you're at. It's not just the mint, because not every mint's created equal. I like the thrifty mint on a hot summer day in California.
I love it. I love it. Most of our listeners know that's the answer I give, because my dad said no one liked mint chocolate chip when he was growing up. So no one would ever ask him for a scoop of his ice cream, a taste of his ice cream.
Fair enough. Smart man. He sounds like your dad.
A man that knew his ice cream well. Well, tell our listeners, what's the scoop? What do you do today?
Yeah, so we, you know, we can do personal or we can do business. What would you like to start with?
Let's start with personal.
Yeah, so personally, you know, my wife and I married 14 years, love my life, best friend, and all of those most amazing things. She's my everything. And then our children together, we have five children, ages 5 to 13, and four daughters and a baby boy, we call him. And, you know, personally love being a dad and then being a husband, and then love playing basketball as much as I can. I played in college, so that's a passion of mine. And then love playing games with my kids, anything that's competitive and anything that teaches them teamwork. So we'll do some Fortnite together. We'll do the board games. We'll do soccer. We'll do basketball. We do jujitsu. We travel. Our goal is to get 1,000 days in 100 unique locations before they're 18. And so we recently moved from California to Florida to continue on that mission, where we get new adventures together as a family, and we homeschool our kids. And so it's a very flexible lifestyle where we travel with the kids on the business trips and and we travel and go all these different places, which is kind of living this adventure. And so, yeah, that's life these days, and then busy with business, and helping people with, you know, capital gains tax, which we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. You said, Fortnite. So I got to ask, like, how's your Fortnite dancing skills?
It's never been better. In fact, we do like a dance off with the kids, and like my son, he likes the one where the guy's holding the 80s, you know, call it, like, you know, stereo jukebox. system. And he gets going, he grabs a pillow and he does it. And then the girls do their moves, and we, you know, we're hoping to get into like a family Fortnite competition, you know, dance and, you know, on the sticks, but we'll see if we can find that.
Yeah. I'm not too embarrassed to admit that, over the holiday, Thanksgiving holiday, I actually Googled how to do some of the Fortnite dances, because I mean, I'm a phenomenal dancer, but like, I just can't pick it up like that. So I had to go practice while we were away.
Get your swing on, man. That's great.
There you go. There you go. Well, tell us what you do today, though, like in a professional sense.
Yeah. And so we unlock freedom for people when they're selling highly appreciated assets to make an impact with the wealth. Our mission is to help on this $84 trillion transfer that's happening over the next 20 years from mostly baby boomers or those that are older, transferring the wealth. And we find ourselves trying to solve a big problem, and that's tax for people. It's capital gains tax. They've built 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years of wealth on these highly appreciated businesses. It could be commercial real estate, primary homes, sometimes it's cryptocurrency, and they have a huge amount of wealth that's accumulated, and they're going to get stuck with this tax, and this tax can hold people back from, you know, we call the 10 major freedoms that we offer with the deferred sales trust is the product we use. And these freedoms include location, time, partnership, 1031 freedom, estate tax freedom, diversification freedom, debt freedom, and a couple others. And what that does is that unlocks the transformation for them to, you know, build an ideal wealth plan. And that's really the biggest thing. A lot of strategies we think are blockbuster methods of exit planning. And we focus like a laser on providing more like a Netflix flexible way to invest, do deals, be an entrepreneur, be passive, be active. There's a ton there, but that's what we do every day. We're just going to talk with people, understand where they're trying to go, and then find out if our strategy is a good fit for them. And sometimes there's other strategies. Sometimes we do use a 1031 or a Delaware statutory trust, or we use cost seg to offset some things. But it's laser focus on capital gains tax, exit planning.
Love it. Well, I know we got introduced because I had a friend that was interested in selling their businesses, and I knew a lot about the 1031 just because I'm in the real estate space, but had no idea how many different options there were to help you reduce your tax burden, if not just not pay it at all based off of how you structure it. So let's start at the easiest to understand for some of our listeners and work back down to the complicated and bury the lead. So most listeners might be familiar with like a 1031. Let's start there. What is a 1031 if that's a new term for some of our listeners?
Yeah. So what is a 1031 exchange? A 1031 exchange, first of all, is exclusive to real estate investors, and it allows you to sell a investment real estate property and move it or trade it or exchange it for another investment real estate property and defer the capital gains tax. So it's a great tool for deferring capital gains tax and continue. It's a continuity plan, right? Instead of exiting the asset, you're just continuing the investment, but it's in another asset. And that allows you to defer capital gains taxes, which unlocks compounding interest, right? Hopefully, if you have a good return on your investment, you're buying a good deal. And instead of paying that tax, you are deferring it, and it's an extra amount of down payment for that next deal. That's the basic parts of the 1031 exchange.
And so 1031 is exclusive to real estate, but through a little bit of internet research, I understand there's like 1032, 1035 for insurance and number of different exchanges out there. Do you also leverage some of those tool sets as well?
They're so rare. I mean, we have strategic alliances that we work with that are qualified intermediaries that might do a reverse exchange, that might, there's eminent domains, there's different things that are like that. But the majority of 99% of people are doing a traditional 1031 exchange on investment real estate. They're identifying three properties within that 45-day window, and they're closing on one, two, or three within 180 days. And so, yeah, we're pretty much in that narrow window there of 1031 traditional ones.
So when I first got involved in real estate, I heard about the 1031 exchange, and I was like gung-ho's a-blazing, like, oh, this is great. I'll just buy this property. It'll appreciate, and then I'll sell it and, go buy another one willy-nilly whenever I want to. You mentioned a couple downsides already. You have to identify the property within 45 days and then close on that asset within 180 days, if I'm not mistaken. What are some of the other downsides to a 1031 exchange that you see in your line of work?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing besides those two would be the debt. We're in a situation where, most of us took for granted how cheap debt was for many, many years. And we assumed or this thought or became the norm that it would stay very low. And now we've seen that it's basically doubled in the past, 15 or so months. And people are in a debt crisis with deals that are actually operationally doing great. And so we really try to help people understand there's really three aspects to really focus on. There's cash flow, there's debt flow, and there's tax flow. And you've got to connect these two. And most people are living in either a one or two dimensional, investment world. And they're not looking in this 3D world of each of these angles. And we took for granted the debt flow. And now you're seeing people who had great cash flow all of a sudden weren't paying attention or didn't buy that rate cap. And now they're upside down or going to the point where they're losing cash flow. And the last piece is that tax flow. And so you've really got to make sure that you're timing all of these three together because the government has a spending problem. It's close to $33 trillion, which means we have a tax problem. Debt has increased drastically, which means we have a debt, in a sense, crisis for a lot of these deals. Although, and then there's cash flow, which is suffering now, right, because of it. So the focus is in the 1031, it forces you to buy of equal or greater value, which means equal or greater debt. And now if I'm selling, which used to be a 3% or 4% interest rate where I had a 5 or 6% cap, but now I'm at a 7 or an 8% interest rate and I'm at a maybe a 4 or 5% cap, it's a negative arbitrage situation, which doesn't make sense, which is why we're seeing a lot of stagnation going on in the marketplace, people not selling, people not buying. And if they do sell, now they're really in a bind, right? Because they probably had to sell it at a discount because the market has shifted. And now they're like, oh my gosh, am I going to buy something? And there's too much debt. And on and on it goes. It kind of mixes up, let alone lower inventory. So I think that's the biggest challenge. The number two things, you can't diversify. You can't have liquidity and you don't have timing on your side. You have to buy something within that short period of time versus getting your powder dry. We believe timing is the number one way for success in real estate. It de-risks yourself because you can invest at different times and you can also be a liquid. So the deferred sales trust, which is our main focus and our niche that we offer, is the ability to eliminate the 1031 exchange, get timing on your side, be debt-free, and buy when it makes sense. Those are just a few of the reasons why you would use it over a 1031.
Yeah, I know you're leading me to water, but I just want to recap just a little bit there. One is, whenever you're going to sell an asset, make sure you know what you plan to do with that and understand the tax consequences of it. I think when I failed in this process is I was like, oh great, this asset has tripled over time. I'm going to sell it. And I got to the closing table and I'm like, well, let's just 1031 this. And they're like, no, sir. You had to have had that process done months before you kind of did this. You have to have escrow accounts and things like that. And then second thing is a 1031 forces you to go back into a real estate deal of equal or greater value. And to your point, something that was cash flowing because it had 2% interest, all of a sudden now if you buy something with 7% interest rate on the debt, it's not cash flowing. So you just took away cash flow from your personal economy.
Yeah, you know, the tax tail wag the investment dog, and you cannot diversify into, if you wanted to go stock market, I'm not a big stock market guy, but if you wanted to buy low, you could do that. And you can't diversify into cryptocurrency. You might want to do that. You can't go into any real estate lending, right? You know, with the 1031, you can't do that. You're just basically stuck in illiquid assets that may or may not be a good time. In fact, in 2008, Matt, it's good to remind everybody, it took 3 years for the real estate market to get its low. 3 years, right? Well, 1031, you're in about 6 months of a window, right? So it doesn't work, but what our parents taught us to do is sell high and buy low. And that's what the deferred sales trust allows you to do. You can sell high and buy when it makes sense, right? The next day, 6 months, 2 years from now. In fact, that's what changed it for me. I saw a gentleman who sold before the 08 crash, a $20 million asset. And 5 years later, he bought it back with the deferred sales trust, all tax deferred at 60 cents on the dollar.
Wow.
I'm saying, whoa, you're telling me you could sell high and buy low the same property in foreclosure that you sold at the peak? I'm like, this is Netflix, right? Why are so many people stuck in Blockbuster? And if there's one thing I want to communicate to everyone right now is if you're ever going to do a 1031 exchange, you want to make sure the people you're working with will give you that backup plan to save a failed 1031, because it's just as important to have leverage in your 1031. And when you don't have leverage is when you don't have options, and the deferred sales trust can save a failing 1031. We do it all the time with our clients, but not every accommodator, Matt, wants you to know about the deferred sales trust, or they don't even know how to do it. And so they're stuck just saying, come to my Blockbuster video and rent the video and return it in 3 days. And we're going, you don't have to do that. You can have Netflix, you can have a regular 1031, you can have a Delaware statutory trust, and you can have the deferred sales trust. And that's what we offer. And we try to unlock that freedom for people and tell people about it. I mean, maybe I'm leading to water again, but this is what we do.
Yeah. I mean, what I love when I first met you was that most people have a hammer and they just see a bunch of nails out there, where I feel like you have a number of tools in your toolbox to go figure out, hey, what's the issue that you're trying to solve for? What do you want the outcome to be? Okay, here's different ways that we can go try that or apply these tools to get that result. What do you want to do?
100%. Sometimes it's a bifractured 1031, right? It's a traditional 1031, like a client in Texas, Craig. He sold a ranch and he ended up buying another ranch in Oklahoma, and he bought another opportunity property in South Carolina to develop some land. And then he did a deferred sales trust, and then he did a partial Delaware statutory trust. So he ended up doing basically four parts of the exit: a partial Delaware 1031 for his debt over basis issue, and then two assets that he wanted to buy, and he still had the excess boot to the deferred sales trust. So it's not always a one size fits all. And it's exactly right. You want to make sure that the tool and the strategy and the team is going to get to you where you want to be. And sometimes it's a mix versus just a 1031, 1031, 1031. And then you go, oh, I wish I would have had that powder dry. I wish I would have been out of that debt. Or I wish I would have eliminated my estate tax. Because what most people miss as well is we've been taught that the 1031 is the end all be all. Swap until you drop and get a stepped up basis. Yeah, that's great for capital gains tax. But what about estate tax? Estate tax is the elephant in the room that's going to cost you 40% of anything above your exclusion amounts. And exclusion amounts are going to be probably about $10 million for a married couple as of 2026, which means this: if you have $110 million asset net worth, right, and you die and get a stepped up basis, great, your kids don't have cap gains tax, But guess what? They have a 40% death tax on $100 million, which is $40 million, which if you've seen the show Yellowstone, it's the entire premise. Kevin Costner has this land and he's the last heir before it goes on to Beth and the other kids. And Beth, the daughter, is saying, sell it, dad, because if they kill you, the death tax is going to take the property anyways. We can't afford the death tax. And so it's this whole thing there. And that's reality. There's a huge amount of pain. It's like the Thanos snap, right? It's coming. The storm is coming. And it's like, if you don't have this stuff outside of your taxable estate, the Thanos snap happens within 6 months of you passing away, and they take 40%. Maybe you have to sell the entire farm. Guess what? We have a solution for that. It's called the DST Plus, known as the DST 2.0. And one day, one transaction, it takes a sale. You could sell that $110 million apartment complex. Let's just say it's one building, right? And we eliminate that estate tax. It's gone. No life insurance, no charity, no gifting required. And that 40% or that 40 million is eliminated. It's gone. And so what I do every time I'm watching Yellowstone with my wife, I'm sitting back and I'm going, Kevin, the DST Plus, just sell it. I'll help you. You know, I'm yelling at him, you know, to see if he'd hear me. And, but that's the reality. If people don't have these strategies, they're going to get crushed by tax. And we want to get the word out and provide the solution, provide the team to execute the strategy.
We're going to institute a new rule that you have to say spoiler alert if you're talking about any sitcom. I'm just kidding. We watched a couple episodes of Yellowstone and honestly couldn't get into it. It's good. Just couldn't get into it. So we're there now where you've talked a little bit about the deferred sales trust. Define it in simple terms. Like, what is a deferred sales trust? And then I'd love to ask you a couple questions about like how people leverage it.
Yeah, it's a seller carryback installment sale with the trust. Okay. So Matt could sell a property tomorrow, let's say a $20 million apartment complex, and he could go, hey, Joe down the street puts $2 million down. He could carry paper for $18 million. So it's a seller carryback. He can do that. And he's deferring what he hasn't received yet. The difference is if we ask Joe to come with the $20 million or get cash or loan, we don't care. And we're not going to finance Joe. We're going to say, hey, Matt, finance the trust. In fact, sell your asset to the trust for $20 million. But carry back paper 100%. And then we'll have the trust sell it to Joe for $20 million. It's basically typically in the same escrow, all in one day, one closing. And when the smoke clears, Joe got exactly what he bargained for. And Matt, you got to defer your tax, which is probably better than paying the tax, A, because assuming you had a large tax liability. But the cool thing is in the trust now, the money's sitting at places like Charles Schwab to start. And we might start in some T-bills at 5%. But you also might go into a lending arm and make maybe 10%, like some groups of work. You might have some own deals of your own that you want to partner with the trust. You might want to put it into a couple different syndications. You might put a little bit into crypto. You might put a little bit into some stocks. In the fact, you can start to diversify this wealth inside of the trust. But you're owed the money. That's the key. You're owed the money and you became a lender. And this is why we have all these flexibilities. But it doesn't stop there because you can partner with the trust. And this is the best kept secret. Most people think, well, Brett, why would I just sell and be a lender? I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an owner. I'm a business person. I want to build industry. Great. Even better. My client, Shay Pope, he sold his business for multiple millions of dollars and he used the capital to in the trust to partner with him to build 70 multifamily units in Tennessee. Ground up development, all tax deferred, right? So you can be an entrepreneur. You can also be passive. You can be active. You can be retired, right? So it really depends on what you're trying to achieve. And then we use the trust as the place. It's kind of like an IRA. It's kind of like a 401k. It's kind of like a solo or self-directed IRA, if you've ever studied those. It's kind of like a lot of things, but the main thing to understand is you became a lender, but you can also joint venture partner and be an owner, all tax deferred to do essentially what you want with the money, as long as it's investments or businesses. And as you receive payments back from the trust, you pay tax. These promissory notes are typically structured at 6 to 9%. Compounding net of recurring fees is the goal, is the first return. And as you receive payments, you'll pay some tax. As you take principal, you'll pay capital gains tax. But they can go on for as long as you really want, and you can pass it on to your kids. So there's no real end if you don't want it to have an end, although you can, it can end and you can pay tax. So that's the basic structure of it, Matt.
So I guess let me walk through the steps here. The first step is to set up the trust, I would assume. The second step is to sell it to the trust or to move it into the trust.
Hey, fellow investors, before we dive into our next segment of the show, I wanted to take a quick moment to talk to you about a fantastic opportunity for you to invest with me. As you know, here at Ice Cream with Investors, I'm passionate about real estate investing and helping you navigate the exciting world of wealth creation through real estate. And that's why, for the first time, I'm thrilled to tell you about an opportunity for you to invest alongside of me. Over the past 3 years, I've been investing in multifamily, mobile home parks, car washes. I've even become the bank and lent out money to fellow real estate investors on a short-term basis. And now you can come join me. If you would like to jump on a call and learn more about this opportunity, head to icecreamwithinvestors.com/invest and find a time for us to connect. And now back to the show.
Yeah, it all depends. And so what are the steps of the deferred sales trust? Step number one, set up the trust. Step number two, it depending on how you own it, whether it's an LLC, S-Corp, C-Corp, there's partners. There's a number of different ways that you might have ownership. You might assign interest to the trust, or it might be a direct deed to the trust, depending on the asset, depending on the state, depending on a number of things. And that's what we do at a no cost, no obligation. We do an analysis of your entire deal, and we give you an option on how to do it. But most of the time, it's an option that's built into the contract that you have the right to use the deferred sales trust as a part of your exit planning. And so, that's the short answer.
Gotcha. So once the asset is in there, then you can sell it to Jim down the street for $20 million in our given situation. But since the trust has the interest of the seller carry, it's not taxable. It's not a taxable event. Is that correct? Or is that the right way to think about it?
The trust establishes a new basis, right? And that's really the key here. Once the trust establishes a new basis, it bought and sold, in your scenario, bought it for $20 million and it sold it for $20 million. And so that scenario creates a new basis for the trust, which is a no gain, right? And in the other scenario, you deferred receiving payment. So you're deferring paying the tax.
Got it. So if I want to withdraw the money from the trust, I have a number of different ways. First of all, I could just straight up withdraw it, but then I'm going to pay some sort of tax, whether it be income or capital gains. Is that correct? If I'm just pulling straight money from it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. If it's interest that's been accruing, let's say it's a $10 million note at 8%, it's $800,000. In year one, you take exactly $800,000. Well, you get a 1099 for $800,000 and you'll pay ordinary income tax on that. Let's say you took $1 million in that first year. Well, 8% is 800,000. The other 200,000 would be principal. So on that little 200,000, you pay some cap gains tax on that.
Got it. So that's how I am getting taxed, but it's being spread out and I get to control my tax bill and how I receive the tax versus just straight up selling something through a capital gains.
You got it, right? And that's the key here. There's what's called tax engineering, right? Where you're not only deferring cap gains tax, but you're deferring income tax. That same promissory note, you may structure. Sorry about that. I think there's some kind of funny thing on my Mac, but hopefully that's pretty cool. those things are so annoying, by the way. You can kind of tax engineer the income, right? Which is cool. So we have some clients that delay the income for a couple of years and let the interest on the note accrue, right? Accrue for a couple of years, and then start taking payments. And so you've deferred the income tax, you deferred the capital gains tax, and it's a nice, you might even move to a Florida or Nevada. You might establish residency from New York, New Jersey, or California, and you move to a new, and once you establish residency in that new state, that state may not have any income tax. So now you just made this an investment and not an expense. Like you're figuring out ways to unlock the trust. And that's the best kept secret with these kind of things, right? Like you got to figure out, because the first thing is it legal? Is it real yet? There's thousands of closes, you know, over 27 year track record, over 24 no change IRS audits. It has all that, billions and billions of dollar volume over the years. The next thing is, you know, what are the controls in place? How does cash protect it? We use third-party financial advisors, third-party operators. You can run the money basically, you know, with yourself. I have to approve of the investments as the trustee. There's some checks and balances there. But the next thing is, like, we got to make an investment, not an expense, right? How do we make sense of these things? Fees are about 1.5% to 2% on a recurring basis, about, you know, 1.25% to 1.5% on a one-time setup basis with a tax attorney. So the tax liability has got to be big enough, which is our minimum is $1 million net proceeds, $1 million gain. This is part of why we have those minimums in place. But once you're through all that, you got to figure out how to make an investment and not an expense beyond just deferring tax, deferring income tax. And these are the things that you can unlock. I'll give you one other idea too. Hopefully you didn't overpay for that 1031, right? Number one. Number two, hopefully you didn't take on debt you didn't want to take on. Number two, and now the money's in the trust. You're making the maybe 5 to 10%. Like my client Warren and Catherine did, we helped them sell the $2.5 million multifamily property in Sacramento. Their NOI was about 120. And I said, look, we can probably get your NOI with the trust net of fees to about 190. And they're like, wait, so no toilets, no trash, no liability, and increase my cash flow by, you know, $70,000. Wow. Sign me up. Not only that, they had two twin daughters and they wanted to spend more time with them versus, you know, spending time with the other three T's, the toilets, trash, and termites. And they're like, let's do this. Like, so they sold, we did it. It's great. So we've increased their cash flow. We've also opened up what's called a new depreciation opportunity. If and when they partner with the trust, they get a new depreciation schedule, which now becomes the trust becomes more of an investment and not an expense versus the old 1031. The schedule travels, which means you have less depreciation if they had just done a regular 1031. And they had owned the property collectively for like 25 years. They did a multiple, they did a 1031 out of a Manhattan Beach property. So long story short, the key is not just the idea. The key is the team to execute ways to make this an investment, not an expense. And this is what we pride ourselves on. We're like every single day, I'm just like, how do we make this thing an investment, not an expense? How do we make it a win-win for everybody? And so that's what we like to geek out about.
So I'm a little sick. I think we were talking before the show here, so I'm a little brain foggy, but I just want to make sure I understand. So one, once the money is in the trust, you can siphon it out and pay how you want, determine how you want to get taxed on it. But two, you can also make investments with inside of the trust with that money. So all of a sudden now the money that's coming out of that trust or that investment, you can then take that money out or siphon that money out. And if you go invest in a real estate property, for instance, well, you've got a whole new depreciation schedule. So you basically could receive $100,000, but have $1 million of depreciation and pay zero tax on it as well.
So, short answer, yes. However, it all depends. Check with your CPA. Got to look at these numbers and look at everything. But yeah, there's the tax flow, debt flow, cash flow, and there's different characteristics of active versus passive. There's some things there, but yes, right? And that's the part where people's brains explode. They're like, this sounds way too good to be true. I'm like, come look at all of our clients. We did a $13 million deal in San Diego, $46 million with two clients in Texas. We did $11 million in Colorado. We just did New York, Connecticut, Florida, of course, Taxifornia, where most of our deals are done, Palo Alto, Saratoga, Oregon. Like, so we've done the deals, we have them, but most of the time people get caught up, Matt, with their CPA hadn't heard about it. Or their commercial real estate broker tells them to 1031. We had one yesterday where the financial advisor said, oh, I just wouldn't do that. Just pay the tax. And I called the client and I said, how long have you been working with that financial advisor? And they're like, oh, I've known her for like 15 years. I go, oh, that's really cool. I go, and you're making all of your money in this, you know, multiple millions of dollar mobile home park. She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. I go, how much have you invested with that financial advisor? She goes, just a little bit. I go, okay, got it. Do you think maybe that financial advisor just wants you to pay the tax so she can manage the money? I'm like, so you're gonna pay about 40% of tax. And so I go, look, I have some really cool financial advisors that also understand the deferred sales trust, and they're certified financial planners. They're some of the best in the country. So I'm not against the financial advisor by any means. I go, but let's either A, bring that person in and educate them. But or B, you know, bring a different financial advisor, because anyone who's telling you just to pay the 40% is probably not looking out what's best for you. I don't know the full story. That's just kind of what she said on the phone. But the point is, there's ways to do this. It's about finding the team to help you execute it and to have a proven track record. And they're going to deliver transformation versus living in the Blockbuster method of everything we've been talking about with Blockbuster 1031. So.
Yeah. First of all, I'm not a CPA. I don't think Brett's a CPA. So go consult your CPAs. This is not tax advice or legal advice. But man, my mind is spinning 1,000,000 miles an hour right now, because there are some properties where we're going to sell for a gain, and I got to figure out what to do with that money. And I was thinking exactly what kind of the financial advisor was. Hey, I'll just sell it. I'll invest it in something else. Use the bonus depreciation, wipe it off. But year two, now I've still got this tax problem. Whereas in this sort of situation, I can be flexible in how I go deploy that capital. It doesn't have to just be into real estate, and I can be flexible in how I get taxed on it in the future. So this is amazing.
Yeah. So two things. And number one, my business partner is a CPA and a tax attorney. I think he's the smartest. I think he's like an Elon Musk when it comes to this. Like, he's a genius. There's no one in the United States that's done more installment sales structures than him and has the IRS track record. And so without him, I wouldn't be here. And so he's the person behind the scenes doing all of the technical work. Okay. And the law firm, the CPA firm, it's a dual firm. So that is very important. However, bring that CPA in to get educated. Most of the time, sometimes people just hold off. They wait to the last minute. They don't want to pay the person, or they want all of the blessing to go on the CPA who's been a general practitioner for their blood work and their flu shot. And all of a sudden you need knee surgery or hip surgery, right? It's ACL reconstruction. I played basketball in college. And I remember my family practitioner did the little, like, you know, he grabbed my knee and did, oh yeah, your knee's fine. I'm like, oh cool, it's fine. Like I'd hurt the knee the week prior and it was all swelled up. And I was like, oh no, I signed this scholarship. It's a total bummer. I think my career's over. He's like, no, your knee's good. You'll be back in 3 weeks. I'm like, oh, sweet. My brother's like, go get that MRI. So I get that MRI and sure enough, my ACL is completely shot. And the guy's like, oh yeah, I probably should have told you to get that MRI. Long story short, your CPA is not that ACL surgeon, right? And they might be doing these tests, but they don't really know. Like, you want to make sure you're getting those second opinions. So bring them on. Number two, I think the thing to wonder is, when do you use the DST versus not? Like, why wouldn't everyone just do the DST all the time, Brett? Well, good question. I would say if you have a good deal, Matt, that you're going to buy anyways, regardless of your tax execution, and you can cost seg it, and you have the bonus depreciation, it's 80% this year, 60% next year, right? By all means, do that. That's great. It's going to be cheaper, less expensive. There's no trustee involved. Like, it's great, right? Now, when you go to exit those deals, look at the DST, because guess when you've done accelerated depreciation, your depreciation is lower, which means you can have a higher tax liability on the way out. That's number one. Number two would be, do you want liquidity? Like, do you feel like the market is, you're going to benefit from having liquidity, right? So you got to balance those two things out. 1031, if you have a great deal, same concept, go ahead and 1031. But again, most of the assets are not even 1031 eligible. So we just did a $13.5 million crypto exit for two clients. This is before the crash. And they wanted to invest into a little bit of real estate, stock market, and a business venture. And so they diversified out of crypto, used our DST. We're the first one to do the DST for crypto. And so it all just depends on what you're trying to solve for. And you're right. We want to give you those options. And hopefully, you know, it's going to give you the freedom that you desire and the impact you want to make.
Yeah, I want to highlight the first thing that you said is, I think there are 10,000 pages to the tax code. It is impossible for one person to understand fully that whole tax code, including people that work for the IRS. So as we get into these niche solutions, it's important that you go seek out advice and counsel from people that focus only on that, because they will know the ins and outs, just like Brett does around the DSTs.
Exactly. And the tax attorney CPA, they represent you. So you're not going on a limb. The other thing people think is, oh, I got to have my CPA approve it because they got to represent me. No. Lifetime Audit Defense to provide it by this with a perfect track record. They are your tax attorney that represents you, right? Should the IRS come knocking, and then they defend it, no additional charge as part of their one-time fee upfront.
Got it. Well, Brett, fantastic conversation. I want to switch us now to our last round. We call this the four toppings. Our first one is, what is your favorite book, or what is a book you've read recently that's given you a paradigm shift?
So I would say the book that I keep coming back to, and I'll actually, when I like a book, I like to read the book. I like to listen to the book, but even better, I like to watch a masterclass on the book. And that book is Never Split the Difference with Chris Voss. And I have found that to be so rich, especially on the masterclass. Okay. And if you haven't taken or downloaded the masterclass, you can go on your iPhone, download masterclass on the app, and then look up The Art of Negotiation, which is based upon the book. And I'm telling you, I probably listened to it 50 times. I'm not even kidding. Over and over and over and over again. Like, it's that rich and that powerful for communication, for negotiation, for listening, for just the basic human way to connect with people, with mirroring and labeling and active listening and all of the things that we should be practicing every day. But as sometimes fast entrepreneurs, I'm moving too fast. And so this helps to slow me down. It helps me to think well. That is an amazing book, but get it on masterclass. I think that answers the question. Yeah.
Were you a FBI negotiator in your previous life?
I was not, but I feel like I've got a piece of Chris. So Chris, if you're out there, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Our second one is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Best piece of advice I ever received. I think you did break it up in different categories here. I think for my faith, it's like, you know, trust the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and lean not on your own understanding, and all your ways acknowledge him, and he'll make your path straight. The times when I've trusted the Lord and obeyed, even when I wasn't sure, even when I disagreed, even when I, you know, thought that I had a better way, and I submit to the word, right? Versus being standing on top in judgment of the word, right? And the word being the Bible. You know, that is the best wisdom with my faith, my family, you know, my finances. I mean, that's like the core of who I am, being a Christian, being a believer. And I'm trying to practice that. So practicing that, and that's not easy, right? It's the practice of that daily trusting and leaning not on, on the stuff that, you know, the world and, or even my mind or myself will tell me to do, right? So that's for that part of it. I think the other part of it would be, you know, for like, if you kick into like marriage, right? It's taking it one day at a time, right? I think a lot of times we get so enamored, you know, even before my wife and I were married, with this idea of like, you know, you're rushing, not rushing necessarily, but just always having to, you know, that next step, you know, you graduate from college, you get that career, you get married, you have the house, you get the baby. It's just like, whoa, like everyone's relationship's a little bit different. And so the best advice I received on this is, you know, each of us are individuals. And then when you get married, you're together, but it's like the component of the relationship itself is, it becomes like almost it's you guys together. It's like you're myself, my wife, and then the relationship. And so, As a leader for the family, it's like understanding that my needs, her needs are super important, but the relationship, it's like we've got to look at that and say, what's the Lord want us to do at this time in life for the children, for the move, we moved from California. So it's kind of like almost like looking back at it at a different angle. It's like my wife may want to get married to me sooner, I may want to get married sooner, but was the relationship ready? Like, was it ready to mature? Was I ready to be in that? So it's that idea of slowing those things down and getting that wisdom. Those are just two, I would say. And I think, you know, I could go into sports. I could go into leadership. I can go into different things with parenting. I don't know if we have time for that kind of thing, but.
Well, those were two good ones and two ones that I want to talk about afterwards that I desperately need help with both of them. So,
okay.
Our third one is, what are you most proud of in your life?
Yeah, I would say for sure my family, my wife and I, what we've been able to accomplish in 14 years, 5 children and all thriving, all believers in the Lord and growing and just amazing. Like we were public school kids. And so like this whole home, we did the homeschool thing before it was like COVID and stuff. We were just doing it because my wife was passionate about it. And I was also passionate about her doing that as well. And it's been such a blessing, right? Our oldest daughter is just thriving and it's just amazing just to see her growth, her passion, her love for what she's passionate about with art and communication and reading and comprehension. Like it's just been amazing. So I would just say so far it's the family, it's the pride and joy of the children and our marriage for 14 years.
And you still have all that hair after 5 kids.
Yeah. You know, people look at me, they go, you have 5 kids. I'm like, yeah, you know, I get pretty good genes, but we try to you know, take care of the body and live well and healthy and stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, our last one and fourth and last one is, if you could sit down and eat a bowl of ice cream with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Yeah. So I think it'd be two. I was just watching it again. And I can never get enough of it. Like the World War II documentaries and Winston Churchill, right? And just the fortitude and the determination to fight against the, you know, the evil of at the time, Germany, right? And everything that was going on and standing up in the face of just so many that were either going to capitulate, right? Or we're going to try to compromise. And he's just like, he stood, right? And they fought. I've just, that would be an amazing one. Winston Churchill. I think also someone like a Martin Luther King Jr., right? For what he fought for and what he did and how he did it in the face of just, you know, with such determination and love and faith, right? Despite so much that he had, you know, he went through and everyone went through there. So that would be probably those two would be really, you know, really great.
I got to say, 160 some episodes in now, no one has said Winston Churchill. And that's a really good answer. I like that.
Thanks.
Well, Brett, fantastic conversation. I appreciate you coming on. Very valuable to me. If our listeners wanted to reach out to you, learn more about DSTs or everything you've got going on, where is the best place we could point them?
Yeah, so check out the book. It's called Building a Capital Gains Tax Exit Plan. It's a great place to start. It's on Amazon, hit #1 bestseller, which is pretty cool. We call it the proven playbook for unlocking your ideal wealth plan when selling assets for yourself or for your clients, right? So it's great for real estate, luxury real estate agents, commercial real estate brokers, business brokers, M&A advisors. It's also great for you, the high net worth individual who wants to create an exit plan. And it starts with building that plan before you exit. So on Amazon, you can check that out. And you can also, by the way, we also have like Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank in the book, right? Which is amazing. Nice. He's incredible. He shares his story of mentor to millions and a little bit about that and other multifamily syndicators, operators, financial planners. It's a really cool book that's more than just tax, because tax can get a little bit boring sometimes. And then just go to capitalgainstaxsolutions.com for all of the things for the DST. And the one little one I want to leave with you is the best 1031 exit plan. Okay. And this is experttaxsecrets.com. If you're ever going to do a 1031, please, friends, don't let friends do 1031s with companies, with people that don't offer the deferred sales trust. All right. Like, you don't want to get caught. I get calls all the time with these big, big QI companies that are like the big gorillas, but they don't cooperate. You want to work with us. Come to us for every single one of your 1031s. We have our strategic alliance that are best class at what they do, but we work alongside of them to give you the backup plan in case the 1031 fails. It doesn't cost you anymore. In fact, it may be a little bit more for what you would have paid for a regular QI company, but you get so much flexibility. So go to experttaxsecrets.com for that.
Perfect. We will link all those in the show notes. And then Brett, thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Ice Cream with Investors. If you like what we serve you here, it would mean the world to me if you would like, subscribe, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app.